From Long Beach, California, I'm Michelle Naranjo.
From Little Bagdad, Michigan, I'm Eric Tritko.
From Toronto, Canada, I'm Michael Banofsky.
From Knoxville, Tennessee, I'm Zach Bowman.
From Romeo, Michigan, I am Craig Cole.
And I'm producer Ben Sanders in Plymouth, Michigan.
This is Roundabout.
Hello and welcome to Roundabout, Episode 4, our weekly chat covering car culture, vehicle reviews, and some of the auto news you may have missed.
Every week, we pick through the dumpster of the internet in search of a cohesive, zen-like theme. We find all kinds of different topics and news bites to fit that theme, however dirty or broken they may be. And whatever's left over, well, we talk about it anyway, because recycling makes you feel good inside. Welcome, everyone, to another scintillating edition of Roundabout. We've got a kick-ass show planned for you today. But first up, I got to mention that our good friend Jeffrey Ross is unable to join us today. Apparently, he had some business to take care of, something about AA batteries and a massage parlor. I don't know. I'm sure we'll hear all about it next week. But don't worry. Don't worry. We've got a very capable replacement filling in for him today, Mr. Eric Tritko, a.k.a. Rumblestrip. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on here, and I'm missing Glumpkin and Sausage just to be on here this week, so.
What?
I was going to say, somebody want to translate that for me?
Stuffed cabbage, how's that?
Okay, there we go.
Oh, a Polish specialty, I would assume,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you are very active on Twitter. Your screen name is Rumblestrip. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, how'd you get into cars? What do you do?
I've been into cars since, I don't know, sixth or seventh grade. I still own the very first car magazine I ever bought, which was the December 82 of Road and Track, which had the DeLorean on the cover. So
really?
Yeah. And so I've been into cars and motorcycles most of my life. I've been blogging for at least 10, 11 years now. Mm-hmm. I've covered motorcycle road racing for 12 years. I've announced motorsports for 20 years. And so,
wow.
Yeah, just dove head in. And when I got kicked out of corporate America, when Bernie Ebers blew up WorldCom, I've been trying to forge my way as a freelancer ever since. So
cool. It's probably a lot more fun doing that than wearing a suit every day.
More fun, yes. More lucrative, not so much.
Yeah, well, journalism is not known for paying very well.
No.
So you also raced motorcycles, right?
Yep, I raced motorcycles for 4 years. And basically when the corporate job went away, there went my insurance, my steady paycheck. And one thing I learned from other friends, you do not race motorcycles if you don't have insurance, because three friends all had broken femurs and all had like $80,000 to $100,000 worth of medical bills.
Holy crap.
Yep, I said nope. So I still get to ride and here and there and still on motorcycles, but I haven't been on a racetrack in a number of years.
Well, I think that still makes you an animal. That's crazy stuff. Which brings me to today's theme. You know, usually when animals and cars come together, it's pretty ugly for both sides, but not today. This week's theme is driving on the wild side. Whoa, nice kitty. Was that RC?
It wasn't, unfortunately.
Oh, insert laugh track, Ben.
We need a lot of laugh track.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so our theme this week, we're focusing on animals. We've got a lineup of news stories that tie in with that. And the first one on the list is about a Ford engine. They're coming out with a new 5-liter V8, and they've codenamed it the Coyote. Our good friends over at pickuptrucks.com, they've got a spy photo of the engine in an F-150. Now, we've seen this engine already, spy photos of it in a Mustang, but not in an F-150 before. So that's kind of interesting. Eric, why don't we start off with you? What do you think of this engine? It sounds pretty exciting for Ford to finally have, you know, a modern, powerful V8 like that.
It's about 5 years too late, or 5 years late in coming, I think. The 4.6, I think, has been around since, what, 93 or 94? And while the performance could... Yeah, while the performance community embraced it reluctantly, they have, but it's never been what it could have been or maybe should have been. So hoping that all the things that were wrong with the 4.6, they fixed with this. And, you know, on paper, it looks good with the numbers we're seeing early. But, I can't wait to next year and see one in a Mustang and get to test drive one of those.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean,
is this what the world's coming to when people are taking spy photos of engines? It's like you don't even know how it's going to be riding or drive or whatever. And it's like, what is that? What is a spy shot going to tell you about in a motor? I don't know.
You can clearly tell lots of stuff. I'm sorry. You can see that the fuel rails are mounted on the inside. You can see that it has port fuel injection, for instance. You can see that it has coilover plugs. That can tell you a lot about it. The intake manifold is a polymer plastic opposed to a cast aluminum, which was actually what they saw on the Mustang, the engine when it was in the Mustang. You can tell a lot from the spy photos and see what direction they're going in with the design.
Except for how it drives, of course.
But it's an F-150. That never changes.
Yeah.
You can get the idea that they're tuning it for some torque by the length of those intake runners on the manifold, too, though. So.
Mm-hmm. It's another hint.
Which is good because the 4.6 has, I mean, it's okay, but that's the biggest thing that it was lacking was that it was really down on torque, especially when you consider it replaced the 5-liter, which was a monster when it came to torque.
Was it? Yeah, I that was before my time, really, especially when the 5.0 was prime.
Especially for a small block motor. I mean, this is just how redneck I am. My stepmother has an 83 GT with a 5.0 in it, and that motor is scary. I have to admit, you know, has no problem grabbing rubber all the way up to fourth gear. It's just it's an impressive motor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've owned a couple of Mustangs through the years, and I mean, my 92 just the factory rated, I think, was 235 horse, but it was like 320 foot pounds of torque. So
and you know,
you could be third gear, $2,000, tip into the gas, and I mean, it would. You could feel it in your back in the seat because it just the torque was, you know, that flat. So,
mm-hmm. Well, hopefully this will alleviate some of the problems that were, you know, are inherent with the 4.6. You know, it's larger, should be kicking out a lot more horsepower and torque, which will be good for the F-150. I think they're guesstimating around 400 horsepower, 400 pound feet of torque for the engine, which will be a pretty nice step up from the 4.6. And the 5.4 as well, because what I think that makes torque wise, I think 395 or something in the F-150. So this will be a
sounds about right.
Yeah,
the 4.6 and the 2010 GT is just embarrassing. You know, when Ford's V8 is producing almost as much or just a little bit more horsepower than the Camaro's V6, that's just sad. That's
well, but the Mustang horsepower is one thing, but again, especially in a muscle car. It's the joke is horsepower sells cars, torque wins races, and the V6 has got a good horsepower number, but the torque isn't as much, and it's way high in the RPM band too. So,
well, sure, and we all know that, but I mean, Joe Yokel strolling down to the car lot doesn't care. You know, he's gonna drive with his Camaro and say, "I got 130 more horses than you do."
It's weird though. I mean, the V6 Camaro feels like Infiniti G35 with a bunch of hay bales in the back of it. It's just sort of wheezy, you know. I don't know. Compared to especially to the Mustang's V8, even if it is very close on power.
Yeah, and that's all about torque.
Yeah. That 4.6 in the Mustang flies for being a small motor, and you know, quote, only what 320 horsepower is it? It moves
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so the other half of this story, we're talking about the 5-liter, Ford's reviving the 5-liter V8. The other half of this is a twin-turbo version of that engine, codenamed the Roadrunner. Get it? Coyote? Roadrunner?
Uh-huh. Meme.
Yep. Exactly. So if you've got a 400-horsepower V8 to start with, and then you bolt two blowers on it, I mean, holy cow. That's going to be kicking out some power there.
If you, in theory, if you only run 8 pounds of boost through those turbos, you should have 600 horsepower.
You've got to imagine
that, that'll get it done.
The aftermarket community is just going to explode with this motor.
Oh, yeah. Is it odd that in the 60s Plymouth had the Roadrunner and had the Coyote Duster package, and now Ford's going to have a Coyote with the Roadrunner Runaway package?
I think they're just calling it Roadrunner, you know, for their
internal
code name. But yeah, it's pretty funny the way that seems, worked out.
It seems strange that Ford is developing the V8 so heavily when the rest of the industry seems to be going with smaller displacement motors with turbos. I mean, even Ford has the EcoBoost. Mm-hmm. It's strange to me that, you know, any Skyline, any Nissan Skyline fan will tell you that the like V6s with or inline sixes with turbos can produce more than V8 levels of power and torque. It's surprising to me that Ford is still pouring a lot of money into the Coyote route.
Well, are they pouring money into it? Because like the bigger 6.2, I guess, what is it codenamed, Hurricane or Boss? They had started development on that from what if I remember correctly, years ago, and then they canceled it to save money when they had a big financial crunch. And now I guess they're just reviving all of that work again. Eric, do you recall that story?
Yeah, the Hurricane was that was almost going to be in the 2003 or 2004 Mustang originally. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was supposed to be around for when, you know, when the 05 rebot, you know, when the new 05 came out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was got nixed pretty quick. So, but I mean, it's Ford is sort of two different things. You've got the eco side and you've got the performance side. And I mean, even okay, we've got Cafe and all the ridiculous numbers that are going to be coming out for that. But even in Europe, you still have, I mean, you know, V10 powered BMWs and everything else and Audis. There's always going to be a market for that. They'll just it just won't be big, but it's still going to be people are still going to want that.
Mm-hmm. Plus, Ford has such a strong heritage with the V8. You know, the flathead 1932. Mm-hmm. That's some history there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, part of it is just the name. I mean, I don't think I think there would be an absolute revolt if Ford just came out and said, all right, we're not doing any more V8s for the Mustang. You know, even if it was making the power, mm-hmm. you know, you're still going to have guys that are out there pining for, you know, their 250 horsepower 302, you know.
Yeah.
I asked around last year why the EcoBoost motor wasn't going to go in the Mustang because it seemed like a really logical thing.
It's not going in? I thought it was.
The twin turbo V6 in a Mustang?
Yeah.
I've been told it's not by two or three different people. And it was two things. One, they thought it was too expensive from the motor standpoint. And then they thought it would take away V8 sales. And they could make more money. But I'm saying they make more money selling a V8 than they could selling the, at you know, where they could price it than the EcoBoosted Mustang.
Interesting, because isn't like EcoBoost allegedly like a $795 option or something? I don't know.
I don't. Yeah, I'm just. I'm just passing along what a couple engineers at Ford Racing Division told me. So,
okay. Well, Craig, when we were driving the MKT and the MKS EcoBoost, isn't that what the engineer told us that the EcoBoost V6 wasn't headed for the Mustang?
I don't recall. Hmm. I plead no contest.
That would be a stupid decision if they didn't put it in.
I mean, it makes sense. It's going to be light. It had good power, flat torque. It could be a great, you know, it's sort of the new version of an SVO Mustang. But
absolutely.
Yeah. And probably could probably get close to 30 miles per gallon on the highway, too.
Well, the 4.6 I'm driving now, GT Mustang's been getting about 25 and a half on the highway, so.
Well, that's not too bad, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I hope they bring out the EcoBoost in the Mustang, but I don't know. We'll have to wait.
If they call a twin-turbo Roadrunner, you know, V8 EcoBoost, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue either.
But seriously, 600 horsepower, and I just went around that. I mean, we're talking legitimately, if you can put sticky tires on it, that's a low 10-second quarter-mile car at 130 miles an hour, probably.
Holy crap.
Just saying.
And the people who will be able to afford that car will be old and gray and useless.
Would it? Yeah, but I mean, no different than a GT500.
All right.
Yeah, I saw two young guys driving matching GT500s on the way to Woodward, and they looked like capital D douches.
They have their Ed Hardy shirts on.
So judgmental, yeah, Michael. Oh, my God.
I don't know. I just don't find horsepower and torque to be that relevant, to be honest, anymore, especially when you can reduce a lot of weight and go with a smaller displacement motor and have the same sort of performance. I mean, guys are always going to find a lot of ways to, you know, squeeze horsepower out of anything, so it just seems strange to...
But if you can take that same weight-reduced chassis and then put even more horsepower and torque in it...
There you go.
That's the American way, sir.
I'll agree with Michael on the weight thing, and that's been something I've been bitching about for years. The Camaro that I had back in May was... I mean, that was 4,000 pounds. The new Mustangs are 3,700 pounds. I mean, my 83 GT was 3,016 with me in it going across certified scales, and my 92 was 3,220, I think, rings a bell on certified scales with me in the car and like quarter tanks of gas. So, that's huge. 500 pounds is a lot of weight.
That's a tenth of a second, isn't it, in the quarter?
It's half a second. Usually 100 pounds is a tenth.
Yeah,
that's usually the cutoff for the girls all date. It's all about weight distribution.
Well, you guys, you like it up top and a little down below, but nothing in the middle, right?
Exactly.
Well, do you guys think that that's going to be a continuing trend? I mean, everybody who says that, well, you know, the cars are heavier because we have stricter crash standards, do you think it's impossible to get around the crash standards weight ratio?
Yeah. Unless you want to pay for aluminum and carbon fiber and stuff, I don't see how they can do it with conventional materials.
And it's not only that. Think about all the electronics in cars. I mean, there's probably 100 pounds of wiring in computers in cars today that there weren't 10 years ago.
For the seats alone.
Exactly.
Yeah. And black boxes those black boxes that, you know, record your every throttle position when you're driving down the highway and stuff. And the data can be subpoenaed out of them in court if you get into an accident, all that kind of crap we don't really need in modern cars.
Yep. All right, guys, so moving right along here, I think it's time to move on to our next story, which oddly enough is another Ford engine story. They announced the 2011 Super Duty trucks about a week or two ago, and they've got a new 6.7-liter Power Stroke diesel V8 codenamed, and are you ready for this? The Scorpion. So, we've got a story here from Jalopnik, and it talks a little bit about the engine, and they've got a mascot. They did a little artist rendering of the engine. That's kind of cool. It shows all the parts of the engine pulled out, and they've essentially constructed a scorpion out of them, and I've never seen anything like that. Michelle, why don't we start with you? You've been awfully quiet this afternoon. what do you think of this? It's kind of scary.
It is kind of scary. I'm just looking at this. I actually hadn't looked at it before. I looked at everything else. Wow. What is that? It reminds me of an album cover.
Yeah, for Whitesnake reunion tour.
Right.
1982. When I heard Scorpion, I thought they were going to do they're going to license the Mortal Kombat character and have the engine shoot harpoons.
No, yeah. I thought you were going to say they have The Rock doing the commercials.
So apparently in the artist's rendering here, they used all of the internal parts of the engine, the actual like scaled parts in the drawing, so they made it like accurate, I guess. Interesting take on a way of promoting their new engine, I guess. I haven't really seen anybody else do anything like this.
Does an engine need a mascot? That's what I want to know.
That's a good question.
It does. And I hope it's the Scorpion.
I hope it wasn't like their leading draftsman or something, because they're probably taking off work for like 2 months to do this stupid mascot.
Who's the guy that does all the engine drawings? It's David Kimball or something. You always see his signature on the engine cutaways and stuff. I wonder if he did this.
I mean, it's supposed to be good for merchandising, but that tail is kind of like flesh-colored. It's creeping me out.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's almost like they went to West Palm Beach, Florida, and had some airbrusher design the logo for them. Like, it looks like something that you'd go and get on a $5 airbrush t-shirt.
Wait, I can see the tattoos already, though.
Exactly.
You got a scorpion under that hood? I got one on my arm, too.
Oh, come on, Craig. It'd be your lower back. We all know.
Oh, that's right.
Your tramp
stamp. The tramp stamp.
Right on your tail, right?
Oh, yeah.
It'd sting.
Yeah. Where everybody can see it when I sit down. Oh, God. Well, I think it's about time to move on to the next story, I would say, before this one gets any more uncomfortable. The next one, BMW Lovos concept came out a couple weeks ago. We've got it here on Autoblog. And this thing is weird looking. Kind of reminds me of half fish, you know, half porcupine. Zach, what do you think of this thing?
You know.
That says it all right there.
I mean, again, this goes straight back to my freaking problem with concept cars that have no basis in reality. This mm-hmm. to me, this is almost as pointless as the Scorpion drawing. You know? I mean, God have mercy. It baffles me. That's all I've got. It baffles me.
Mm-hmm. Now, Michael, I'm sure you have a contradictory point to make about this. So,
I love it. I love it. Modern cars are boring. And I mean, that's actually only a student. It was a scale model. I mean, it's only a student project. Apparently, Chris Bangle actually went out to visit this girl's presentation for her final class. So I think it's getting some attention within BMW. Not so much for...
God, I hope not.
Hey, let's do this. But I don't know. To me, having power cells that can move when the cars stop to better capture the sun and recharge batteries and stuff is a positive step forward. But I'm so over most modern cars that this is a nice breath of fresh air.
I could see all those motors working well up in your territory about January, February when it's 35 below, you know, Celsius.
And crusted in ice.
Even better, I can see one fender bender at around $100,000.
That's another point.
It looks
point.
Like that Velcro, that metal Velcro that we talked about a few weeks ago.
The Metaclet, right?
Metaclet, yeah. Exactly.
The BMW Metaclet concept. It's just bizarre. And it looks like the wheels also... The spokes on the wheels turn as well. If you look closely at the top picture where everything is like folded down, you can see the wheels are kind of open. But in the picture below, they're kind of spread out and you can see that they're red. So that's something.
Wasn't it almost look like those Michelin airless tires they've been playing with for 10 years or so?
Oh, yeah. What are those called?
The Tweel.
Yes, the Tweel.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if rappers would get over... being able to say that they got some 24-inch tweels on their, on their Caprice.
Speech impediment or something. Yeah, man, I got tweels on there. Yeah.
You know, Michael, I tend to agree with you that, you know, the modern design of most cars is pretty freaking boring. But I guess I just, what I want out of my concepts is a little bit of functionality, you know, just a little.
I totally agree. I mean, then the Pontiac Stingers for you or the Aston.
I'm not familiar with the Stinger, no.
For our listeners, if you Google on YouTube, so YouTube on Google, or YouTube search for the Pontiac
Why don't
Stinger.
You Bing it.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'd rather not.
It's a decision engine, Michael. Come on.
I've already made my decision. I'll use YouTube, thanks.
I thought you were going to say Alta Vista.
Oh.
Lycos.
Or Dogpile, maybe. Actually, the Pontiac Stinger predates all of those useless search engines. It's a video, and you'll know when you found it because it's bright green. And it's hilarious because it's a promo video for it. It's about 2 minutes long, and it's like, the Pontiac Stinger with AM/FM radio, home pregnancy kit. It's like flares, toaster, everything. This concept car literally had the kitchen sink in it. It's ridiculous.
Was it the Homer Simpson car?
It was actually the same color as the Homer Simpson car, but a little bit more Banshee-like, if you know Pontiac concepts. And, I mean, the video opens with them pouring green paint out. It's sort of like Nickelodeon when the celebrities get slimed.
Okay, well, our next story fits our animal theme nicely because it involves a Jaguar. There's an article on Edmunds.com InsideLine. Apparently, the now Indian-owned company is working on a concept car called the RD7, and it's kind of a five-door coupe type thing in the same vein as the Audi A5 or maybe the BMW 5 Series GT, the Gran Turismo. And they've got a picture on their site of the RD6 concept, which came out a couple years ago. And it's pretty nice looking, if you ask me. But what do you guys think of a hatchback Grand Touring Jaguar?
The BMW 5 Series Touring?
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of that, and what do you make of a Jaguar version of that type of car? Good idea, bad idea?
Well, this one's supposed to be...
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, so do I. This one's supposed to be a little bit smaller. It's supposed to be on a shortened XF platform, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They need to do something different to shake up their image. They've become, you know, an also-ran.
I mean, I had the XFR. Oh, go on, Michael. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, like, when's the last time Jaguar won a race? They won some stuff in the in sports cars in the 80s and 90s, but I mean, from being a very big, you know, very big in sports cars, the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s to some extent, and now they're just sort of like plush, wood-ridden luxury cars from Britain that don't really work when you want them to.
They're Buicks for people with money.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it. Michelle, do you like this design?
Well, I mean, I love it. I love cars that look like pregnant ants, right? The thing is, though, the RD7 is so close to the RX8, right? The suicide doors are, like, almost exactly the same because there's, like, no handle, right? But it's still existent for a back door. So it's not crazy original, really. It's based in a really traditional design. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, you know, the 50s.
Can you imagine how unreliable it would be if Jaguar did a rotary motor?
Oy.
Yikes.
Well, it depends if Lucas is doing electronics or not. Yeah.
The Prince of Darkness. Yes. So who knows? Maybe we'll see this car coming out in a couple years. Rounding out our animal theme this week, we've got a story from KITV. I believe they're out in Oregon. It's just a really feel-good story, you know. There's a zoo out there called Wildlife Safari, and as an attraction to bring more people in, they've got three of their elephants, Tiki, Alice, and George. They've got them doing car washes, and they guarantee that your car will not get clean if you bring it there. So I just thought this was kind of hilarious, because the video, you can see the elephants, you know, sucking water into their trunks and spraying the cars off, and they've got sponges and they're working, wiping the vehicles down. It's pretty funny.
Nothing protects paint better than elephant snot.
it's better than carnauba wax.
That's right. Keep an eye out.
This reminds me of a couple of summers ago. Do you remember when all the elephants started killing their trainers?
No. I don't recall that story, Michelle.
Yeah, there was a huge problem apparently with the circuses where they were turning around and killing them because they were, you know, mad at being worked so hard.
Well, to be fair, the article says if they get bored, they will rotate them out. So,
how do you know an elephant's bored?
Probably when he flips your minivan.
See, the car wash wouldn't go over too well in St. Thomas, Ontario, which was the final resting place of Dumbo, the elephant.
Is that the one they electrocuted?
No, he actually got hit by a train.
Oh.
Talk about a cheerful conversation. I mean, no, he got hit by a train.
Well, he might have been trying to wash it. I don't know.
Well, look, Dumbo, there's the elephant grabbing the sponge. Look at that. Oh, spraying the car down. Wow. They've got skills. Look at that. And they don't even have opposable thumbs. I mean,
what'll be the most elephant-like car to wash, though? Maybe like a Nissan Armada, something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely pachyderm-esque.
A Dodge Sprinter.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
So there you go. If you're anywhere near Winston, Oregon, swing by the Wildlife Safari, and you can get yourself a deluxe elephant auto wash. So anyway, let's take a short break now. We can hear a few words from one of our generous sponsors. After that, we'll get to our blind spot story of the week and a whole lot more.
Did you hear that? It's the comforting sound of my safety skid brakes with patent-pending safety squeal technology. During dangerous panic maneuvers, safety squeal warns other motorists and innocent bystanders to brace for impact. When the wheels lock up, you know they're stopping with maximum power, and the violent pedal pulsation lets you know they're working. Think of it as a soothing massage for your tootsies. Remember, you can stop on a dime or you can do it for less with safety skid brakes. Watch out, kids, I'm coming through!
That'll go over really, really well when people are listening to that in the car.
Watch out, kids, I'm coming through. Gets me every time. It sounds like he needs a safety pry crowbar to dislodge that stroller from his undercarriage. Remember, from pads and shoes to anchors for boats, Safety Skid is a worldwide leader in stopping technology. And hey, try their new lung-friendly brake linings with 75% less asbestos for 25% less coughing. That's guaranteed. So, if you're ever doing your brakes, Zach, think Safety Skid.
I did some brakes this weekend, actually.
Did you use
Safety Skid, sadly enough.
Well, thanks for not supporting our sponsors. I appreciate that.
I wish I had underwear with Safety Skid.
Don't we all?
You've been doing burnouts, haven't you?
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, it's time for our blind spot story of the week right now. When news topics go unnoticed, are underreported, or otherwise fall off the radar, they land in our blind spot. Today's story is about automotive advertising. And no, I don't mean our fake commercials. All right, this week's blind spot, guys, is an auto commercial. It's posted on CNET. It's an auto commercial for Spanish automaker Seat. And this has got to be the weirdest thing I have seen. Initiate playback. All right, there we go. Little girl sees a monster in a box. Lots of newspapers. Monster looks like a beach ball with fur and teeth. Kind of creepy. There with her dad. They take it home. It becomes a part of the family. Heartwarming.
He feeds himself with love.
He gets bigger and bigger. He's eating up all that love.
The more love he gets, the more he grows. If we want him to stop growing, we'll have to stop loving him. But how can we stop loving him?
If they had Chevy Tahoes in Spain, this wouldn't be a problem.
I want you to come with us.
They're Spanish, not German, Ben.
It's all the same to Ben.
Por qué?
The gist being they can't fit him in their car.
Exactly.
And now they start singing, "Oh, brother."
He looks very sad, too, Ben. And I would be, too, if I couldn't fit in a van or in the car and I had to call the fire department to get me out of my house. There we are. There. More singing. That thing is creepy looking.
This is thrilling radio, by the way.
That's what I feel. Finally, we get to the point.
Yes,
after
finally.
2 minutes.
2.5 minutes later.
Looks like the family went out and got a brand new Seat with more room in the back, and now they can fit their, whatever that is, monster. They can cram him in there.
Because and you know
La Familia.
Monsters, they grow and grow and grow.
That is creepy as hell. Just gonna put that out there.
Doesn't that make you want to go buy a new Seat? Apparently not.
At least tissues.
Say it. Seat, for those who can't spend the extra 500 euros to buy a real Volkswagen.
But Seat is Auto Emotion. It's so much sexier, and they've got Shakira to do their ads for it. Well, unfortunately, she wasn't in this one, unless she was the monster. Maybe it was a metaphor or something.
I don't know. Maybe Michelle, does that big cuddly monster make you want to buy a Seat?
No, I wouldn't mind having the monster, but...
All he takes is love. That's all he needs. Yeah, that's got to be the strangest car commercial I've seen. What about you, Michael? I know you prowl YouTube relentlessly looking for commercials and other auto-related videos. How does this fit in?
My favorite one is the there's a Tatra commercial for the T603,
the V8, and the rear engine air cooled.
Yeah, where they actually roll it, down a hill to show how safe it is, and then it drives away.
Well, that doesn't prove safety, but
no, but it's like the guy's running away from the cops the whole time, and then they roll it down a hill, and then the cops are kind of impressed, so they let him go. I think.
It's like, so was this one almost as good or no?
No, I don't know. It's hard for me to really get on the side of engineering the cuddly stuff in commercials. I tend to gravitate towards car commercials that are just very strange. Like the ones in Korea. I mean, there's a Hyundai Accent one that people can YouTube with the Accent 3-door. And they're comparing the Accent 3-door to Muggsy Bogues, the former NBA star. And as Muggsy Bogues is flying through the air and dunking, the Accent is flying through the air. And when Muggsy Bogues swishes the basketball through the net, the Accent 3-door lands on the pavement, and you can see the entire car just chatter. Like, it looks like it's going to just burst apart at the seams. Yeah, it's wonderful. And you can tell that it's doing that at full speed. I mean, those are the kind of car commercials I like, because someone at Hyundai said, you know what, we'd like to show people that our cars will fall apart when you jump them 30 feet in the air.
Of strange commercials, did you see, guys, watch the Top Gear Australia, how they ran all the 70s commercials from Australia this year in the series?
No.
And no. I put them up on my blog months ago, but there's a couple of them that were funny, and one of them was for I think it was for a particular Holden, and it was sort of like the early Aztec, where it had, you leave the hatch up, but it had a tent thing that you could put on the back of it and zip it up. And it was basically go out to the, take your significant other, go out to the lake, zip this up and have sex. There's some funny ones. There's another one for like the Chrysler Imperial, and it was like, you know, our car sucks, but it's new. Chrysler Sigma. That's it. Yeah, someone had put it. I think Mud Monster put it up in the chat room here. The Chrysler Sigma or something like that. Yeah,
Why buy new when you can buy used?
Or if you remember the 70s Chevy commercials where it's like baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. It was football, meat pies, kangaroos, and Holden cars. same exact song, except they just changed the lyric. You know, they changed the lyrics to fit to Australia. It's pretty funny. If you do some searching on my blog, you can find it back there. It's some of
just so the listeners know, what is your blog? What's the URL?
Rumblestrip.net.
Okay.
And cool. Didn't you post up one that I had found a while ago of the, was it the Nissan Ervan or something?
No.
They were comparing it to they were comparing this Nissan van in Australia. It's like a horse-drawn carriage. It's kind of weird.
No, yeah. I did not see that one.
Are you trying to convert Mennonites or Amish people to motive power? Like, what are you guys trying to do? Is this a problem in Australia? Is this the untapped market? People who ride horses to work? I don't know.
For a particular part of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana, maybe.
All right, guys. With that, I think we can move on to our auto gadget. No, pardon me. I lied. It's time to talk about what we've had in the garage this week. Real good. A couple of you guys have had the new Ford Taurus this week. Pretty solid car. I've driven it. Eric, you've had it. Ben, you've been in it as well. And then the other vehicle we were going to talk about is the Hyundai Genesis 3.8. And Zach, I believe you've been in that, right?
I have.
Oh, very good. And I've got it for the weekend. So why don't we start off with the Taurus? Eric, you've been in it, or you have it now. I can't remember.
We're not going to talk about the Toyota Sienna here? What is this? Come on.
No, I'm sorry. We did Toyota last week.
Ugh. Don't worry. Yeah. You're not missing much.
Just room for whatever in the back seat, right?
Sorry, Eric. I took away your thunder. I apologize.
No. It's all good. Yeah, I had the Taurus last weekend. It was it was a pretty good car. They've got a couple little beefs with the interior, some interior materials. The cooling in the seats works really well. I did like that. It's a big car. I don't know if that it's as big as like a Crown Vic or something, but it certainly feels that big. But what came in handy is the new, when you put it in reverse, it can see both to the left and right for traffic coming from the side. And in my neighborhood, that was very, very useful, because even though my house is probably 100 feet from a stop sign, all the locals use that as a launching pad and are probably doing about 50 by the time they get to the house. And it's one lane through there. So two cars are parked on both sides of the road. There's one lane through there. And I can't tell you how many times almost everyone around here almost gets nailed by that. So very useful when all of a sudden you hear that things are beeping at you and you see a car coming from the left or right. And it works pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I as a piece of technology, I'm not a big proponent of all the technology in cars, but that one I could see being useful.
Yeah.
What do you think about the butt massage? Did you try that?
Yeah. Yeah, the back one was okay. The butt one was a little creepy, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'd have to concur. It's sort of like, all of a sudden I have a wallet under my left cheek. Oh, nope, not anymore. Whoa, that's gone. All right, whoa.
The only thing is, if you were looking for like the massage thing, wouldn't you want both to be going at the same time, not either the back or the butt? I don't know. Just
they only go one at a time?
I
have to say, I love that active motion thing. That is so nice on a long drive for me. Now, I'm a pretty slender person, so I tend to get fatigued sitting in the seat that long. I've got to squirm around to get comfortable, and to have the seat move a little bit like that is a godsend on longer drives. I wish I had it in my car. I thought it was very, very handy to have. But I can see where it would feel violating, Ben.
Greg doesn't mind being violated by a Taurus.
No, not down there. What do you think about the driving of the car? Ben, why don't we start with you? Give us your non-car guy perspective on the 2010 Taurus. I know you weren't in it very long, but...
Yeah, I mean, heavy car. I didn't have the show version, but it had, you know, plenty of power to get it around, no doubt about it. But it just feels heavy to me. It's almost like it almost feels like driving an SUV, like lowered to the ground. It's just very chunky. I don't know what it is about it, but you go to the trunk, and God, it feels like it's up to your chest or something. It's so high. It's like the MKS, isn't it, on the same platform?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they're both huge cars, and the Taurus is no different. And so I guess that's one of the things that struck me. I can't say that it felt underpowered at any point, but it's sort of a boat.
Yeah, it's no doubt a gigantic car. There's a lot of metal there. Michael, have you driven the new Taurus yet?
I have not, but is it like the MKX where you can't really see out the back when you're reversing?
It's tricky, I would say. It's slim.
Do they do cars like this so that they get more insurance claims from elderly people who like larger cars and buy larger cars? And it really annoys the hell out of me, because do they really need to have that sloping roofline and stuff?
Well, I mean, I think they could do the freaking sloping roofline and still make it so that you can see out of the back of the car. That's something that really really takes me off anytime I get in any new car, is just check the visibility. You know, I mean, it's not impossible to build an attractive car that you can actually use, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my rant on not being able to see out of the back of your car.
Yeah, I don't remember it when I drove it a couple months ago. I don't particularly remember any blind spots, but I mean, it was a while ago, so there may be some pretty big ones. Moving along, Hyundai Genesis 3.8. That's the coupe 3.8. Zach, you've been in this car. I've got it for the weekend. What do you think about it?
I really like that car. You know, Hyundai's does a really good job of having a fairly inexpensive vehicle that provides a lot, you know? I mean, even all the way down to the accent, they're just good cars with lots of good stuff on board that you would have to pay extra for from another manufacturer. And the Genesis is the epitome of that. You know, you name it and you can have it on there. And in the 3.8, you can still come out at under $40,000. And it's pretty quick. It handles yep. pretty well to be the size that it is. And it's a good looking car. You know, I mean, it's obviously ripped mostly off of Mercedes, but that's fine. You know, I'm not going to bribe them with that. So,
yeah. I mean, I was amazed at how much fun this thing is to drive. I didn't expect it to. The steering is very tight. In fact, it actually will read the road. It'll move around a little bit with the ruts in the asphalt, mm-hmm. which I was surprised by. It's very direct, very solid. And what's it got, like 306 horsepower, I think?
Yeah, something
it's
like
it's more
that.
Than 300.
What surprised me the most was the transmission, 6-speed automatic. And a lot of manufacturers now are putting paddle shifters on automatics that have no business having paddle shifters on them. And mm-hmm. oddly enough, the Accent, at least the one that I – or Accent, the Genesis, at least the one that I had, did not have paddle shifters. But the manual mode on the transmission was quick enough that it could have used them.
Yeah, the one I've got is a manual right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I was on launch of the sedan, and it was interesting because – when they talked about the different powertrains, they actually said that they have two totally different 6-speed autos in the sedan. One mated specifically for the 6, one specifically for the 8. And the 8-cylinder one was the ZF one that they use in the BMW 5 series as well. And that sort of attention to detail you don't really associate with Hyundai necessarily.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I think a lot of people just sort of write off Hyundai as, you know, cheap throwaway cars.
But you know, there was a Car and Driver did a review. I forget the car. It was a couple of years ago. But the line, whoever wrote the article, the one line they put in the story, Hyundai is no longer the disposable camera of cars. And I thought that described it perfectly.
That's true. One of the most entertaining cars I had over the summer was the 09 Accent 3-door. And it had the SE, their sport package, quote unquote. That thing was a blast. I mean, it, you know, very lightweight, had zero power. I mean, it was a super anemic motor, but, you know, it handled pretty well. It had very competent brakes, and it was decently attractive. And, you know, for a low-buck car, you know, you can't ask for much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Now, can we quickly say that I'm checking the chat, and we have Dan, one of the Hyundai PR guys, just jumped into it.
Dan Benor.
I'll safely say that Hyundai is awful. I'm just joking.
Dan, very nice car, a blast to drive.
That's right.
Gets my vote. No complaints out of me.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. What's next on our list here? All right, we did it in the garage. Now let's change gears a little bit and talk about this week's auto gadget. Oh, terrific. And this week we've got an extra special double-header edition of Auto Gadget. The first topic we're going to talk about here is called the PC Rides Computer. It's a desktop computer that is modeled. The case is modeled to look like a Dodge Charger SRT8. Just when you think you've seen it all, somebody comes out with this. It makes me shake my head. That's all I can do. It's very, very tacky.
So is this how Fiat's going to actually have Chrysler make money?
Licensing all these other little tchotchkes? It's not a bad idea.
Nothing
Man.
Says my computer is really not that fast, like having it in a charger case.
It's an SRT8, no less.
My computer is just barely competent enough to be sold, actually, turns out.
I bet you could sell a ton of these at a NASCAR race.
Yeah, indeed.
I wonder if Cupertino had any hand in designing it. Steve Jobs.
Looks more like a Zune HD to me.
Oh. Michael, all I have to say is I hope you don't review cars the same way you do consumer electronics by not testing them and then sending out blanket statements, you know.
See, usually if I don't have anything nice to say, I don't say it. But with the Zune HD, I'll make an exception.
Well.
But as I said to you earlier, the Michael Banofsky podcast is available for Zune. So
I'll have to remember to not download
just,
it.
Just for you. Yeah, just for you.
Put that on the top of my do not listen to list.
That's fine.
So back on topic. The CD tray on this computer is actually in the lower grille of the car. Now that is slick. And instead of having LEDs, the headlights light up. Isn't that cool or what?
Wouldn't you love having that shine in your eyes while you're surfing porn 3 a.m.?
Shut up, Ben. It'll match my race car bed.
But you know what? There's also carmouse.com where they make the little mice that are actually cars and their little headlights light up. So you could actually have a car sitting next to your car.
Oh, like they could
play together.
They need to make the speakers that are like stacks of tires now or something.
Check it out. You can have a charger mouse for your charger computer.
Oh, God.
You know, I look at this thing and I wonder how long it would take a 4-year-old to destroy this. You know, like come into the office, find the toy, and then just demolish it, you know?
Car.
Did they make VCR tape rewinders that look like this?
Yes, actually, I think they did.
VCR rewinders. If you're just too busy to let the VCR itself rewind it, you can plug it into the rewinder and it'll do it faster.
I remember a FireWire hub that looked like Godzilla, and when it was active, the red its eyes would blink red. So
now, see, that's cool. That I would own.
And they plugged in on the back, so like the FireWire connectors coming in were like the spikes on the spine of Godzilla.
See, that's awesome. This,
but this is awesome
charger
too. Zach, no. You can get it in Hemi Orange, Detonator Yellow, Plum Crazy. Come on. Colors. You can, you know, coordinate it with your drapes or whatever.
Yeah. I don't have Hemi Orange drapes. I'm sorry. I know we're in Vol Country down here, but still.
You can get a standard version of the car, which has an Intel Core 2 Duo processor at 2.26 gigahertz, and that'll run you about $1,850. You can step up to a turbo, or the one I would get, of course, the Super Turbo. It's a Core 2 Duo Intel chip at 2.53 gigahertz, and that's only $2,500. So with Christmas coming up...
Or you could get a 17-inch MacBook for the same price.
But then you got to use OS 10. It's like, ugh.
And it wouldn't look like a charger.
Yeah, come on.
You say it like it's
I could see myself putting a little handle on top of it and taking it around instead of my MacBook. I could see that.
That would be it's the so Chrysler horrible. PT Cruiser convertible. The basket handle's already built in.
I could see you going to LAN parties with that and, you know.
Hey, guys, I got my new computer.
All right.
This plays World of Warcraft, cool. Just killer.
Sweet. I'm so excited. That's totally awesome. Oh, well, all right, that's enough about that. I've made myself sad again. But our next
it sounds like we all stayed up too late last night.
It's true.
I'm just throwing that out there. I love you all.
Our next auto gadget is actually cool. And Mr. Benjamin Sanders, you found this one, I believe, tagged it for us. It's a robot that can like transform itself into a car, and the builder of it can actually like sit on it and it'll walk him around like one of those things from Star Wars. What was it? The Empire Strikes Back? Those walking things? Yeah.
One of those.
So
whatever it's
yes.
called.
Yes.
ATST, AT&T,
sure.
Chicken walkers.
Boom.
Yes, those things. Yes.
So it's not quite a transformer, but it's the first step.
Say, it's missing the sound effects.
But yeah, it goes from the bipedal position and it can fold up and roll itself along. Then it gets on its knees and it can stand up.
Pretty speedy again. Too, if you watch the video.
I know.
So this is better than Asimo.
Asimo, yes.
Better than the unicycle, if you ask me.
God, that was horrible. That thing. I don't understand it.
This you is guys see their, sorry. Speaking of that unicycle, do you guys see that EVN concept that they have a built-in docking station for their U3X electric unicycle thing?
Right in the door panel. Yep.
Yeah. EVN, freaking awesome. Like I would absolutely drive that car. It's pretty sweet.
Agreed.
Yeah. I would drive the Honda 600 thinks that's a small car.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I think though if you buy one, you're contractually obligated to wear pink shirts. Which honestly, I've got a full complement of pink shirts, and I really don't. I wouldn't mind because that car is just awesome.
It is.
It's one of those cars where you can get through traffic very quickly. Same with a Mini, because Minis are really fast because you can drive like an idiot and no one cares because it's so cute.
Right.
And you still get led into traffic. And there's what's the F for?
I think what's I'm the only person in the world that does not like Mini.
Like the original Mini, like the
modern one. Doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry. Everybody likes to rave about how much fun it is to drive. Yes, it's fun to drive. Everybody talks about, you know, how quirky it is and yada yada. But I'm sorry, I don't drink that Kool-Aid. Doesn't do it for me.
What Kool-Aid?
What's a better small car?
I don't know. What's a good small car? The Civic.
Mini's good.
Civic Si is fun.
Not a hatchback, though.
True story.
The CRX.
CRX, yeah. I'd like to think my 2002 Focus ZX3, I'd like to think that's a fun car.
Well, the ZX3?
Yeah, no, the ZX3.
That ain't how we pronounce it in America.
Yeah, this is America.
America.
Mud Monster on the chat says the Mazda Speed 3, and I'd be inclined to agree if it didn't torque steer like a lunatic.
The Mazda 3 is a damn fine small car.
But with the new Mazda Speed 3, did they just forget to finish the hood? Because there's that massive hole in the hood for the intake or whatever,
the intercooler. I don't know.
Did I just throw you guys off your game because we were talking about auto gadgets and now cars?
Now, the only thing that throws me off about the new Mazda 3 is the damn smiley face.
Kills me.
That's what everybody says.
That was a pretty attractive little car until they, I don't know, messed up its face.
Although it does open the aftermarket for a lot of, you know, pull that piece of plastic out and put something else in there to
front nine intercooler.
Yeah. Tube bar grill. It looked like the chrome.
Absolutely.
Oof. All right. Well, in the interest of saving time, I think it's time to move on to our next segment, which is psychology.
You cannot decide whether you are a hatchback or a sports sedan. I think you have multiple personality syndrome. Why don't you pull into my garage and tell me how that makes you feel?
This is Psychology, a look at personality and cars with our very own Michelle Naranjo. This week's installment is all about autos and sexuality. Michelle, what have you got this week? What's going on?
Well, Travis Parman, who was previously GM's self-appointed chief gay officer, is leaving GM. Not sure where he's going.
Is that his official title?
No, he was actually East Coast Publicity Director. Was apparently very responsible for the success of the Camaro sales with the lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So in lieu of that and the sort of, I mean, I think there's a big upswing in the interest in gay culture of cars. There's Gay Wheels, for example, gaywheels.com. The Vanity Fair has their own blog now called Stick Shift, which I have to be very careful when I say. And Joe from gaywheels.com sent me a study this week that's pretty interesting and sheds some light on the buying practices amongst the LGBT crowd and new cars. So interestingly, even though Travis was supposedly very successful at GM, GM does not show up on any of the studies.
Interesting.
It says,
well, what brands do show up on the study?
For example, lesbians are 11 times more likely to own a Saab than the general population. Gay men are 19 more times more likely to own a Saab than the general population.
So Saab is a popular brand with that crowd.
Saab is very popular, but Subaru is also seen as the most gay-friendly brand.
So how, you have a Forester, right, Zach?
I do. I have a Forester 2.5 XD.
Just checking.
What are you trying to say, Craig?
I don't know.
Got a problem with
Michelle?
Where does the Miata fall on that list?
Doesn't look like Mazda's even on the list, is it?
No, Mazda. Ford actually does Ford pretty well, but Toyota seems to come out as next brand consideration. They do. Toyota seems to do very well. BMW with men, but not with women.
Hmm. I wonder if what causes that. Is it the styling of the cars? Is it the marketing that companies do?
I don't think it's entirely either of those. I think part of it is, you know, certain companies have a better track record with how they treat their employees as far as what partners get rights and what partners don't.
Ah.
And I know Subaru has a really good track record as far as that goes. And I don't mind supporting that, Greg.
But you live in the South.
God damn it.
I'm sorry, Zach.
Yes, I live in the South. Yes, and most of my neighbors are mouth breathers, but I stand alone.
Well, I do know when Joe first started GayWheels.com, I went to go have a look at the site to see, because what he was doing in the beginning was actually rating the manufacturers on who had certain partner rights and was, you know, had, you know, positive hiring practices and all that stuff. And the two that were not favorable at the time were Kia and BMW, which I owned one of each. And they've since made it onto the list of being friendlier.
Doesn't Honda have a pretty bad track record as far as that goes, too? I found that disconcerting.
I was saying in the chat that I think the Camaro is the gayest car on sale.
Why is that?
Well, because its movie character is Bumblebee.
I see what you did there.
Play on words. Hmm.
Not that's a bad thing, of course, but I don't know. Yeah, Michelle, sorry.
There was that video.
Yeah, the video that GM pulled of the men in tight underwear hand washing a new Camaro for the Chevrolet sponsored Gay Day at the Movies. It was going to be held in the summer, but apparently someone at GMPR, the video was up on YouTube for a few months, and someone at GMPR found the video and had it pulled. Not like that, but had the video pulled.
So I wonder how the buying habits of the gay and lesbian community compare to straight people.
I don't think it's all that different, to be honest.
I wouldn't think either, but...
I wouldn't... Oh my God. Sorry.
Is it a rooster?
So your chair just rolled over your dog's tail?
And now we're all awake. Thank you, Michelle.
Okay.
Sorry about that, you guys. No, I think some of those statistics about, like, you know, your car says if you're successful, sexy, or understated, I think that probably goes across the board with all buyers.
So with that, I think it's a good time to move on to our new segment this week. We're starting another one. It's called Tip of the Week. And with that, I think my microwave popcorn is done.
I thought it was going to be like a 7-minute flourish.
So did I. I was like, really? That's it?
We like to mix it up here.
Yeah, keep you on your toes. So, Michael, a couple weeks ago, it might have been in one of the pre-chats before the show, you had mentioned that up there in Canada, you guys take your driver's ed test and they teach you how to adjust your side view mirrors.
I didn't say that, no. No one teaches you how to do that, actually. yeah, because it really annoys me when people talk about cars and say there are huge blind spots over your shoulder. And there's actually a way to set your mirrors so that much, if not all, of that blind spot is gone. So, yes, you can live without a blind spot in your vehicle for the rest of your life. And the way you do that is that you move your body basically almost that your left ear is touching the left window of the car and move your mirror out to the left so that you can barely see the side of your car. And then sit back in the middle and then scooch over to the right a little bit towards the, move your head towards the middle of the car, look in your right mirror, and move the mirror out to the right so you can barely see the side of your car. And when you sit back where you were before, if you've been driving so you can see the side of your car in the mirror, you will think it's absolutely the strangest thing ever, because you can't see the side of your car with your mirrors. But what happens is that when cars come up behind you in the central rearview mirror, as soon as they leave that mirror on either the right or left side, they'll actually appear in your left or right mirror in your blind spot. So you know if you can see a car in your left or right mirror with the headlights on, or, you know, just you see a car, that means that they're in your blind spot. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, after setting your mirrors like that, it's probably a good idea to have a few weeks of shoulder checking and things. It works a lot better if you live in a more like a city or a place where you do a lot of highway driving, because if you're just driving on rural roads the whole time, it'll seem very strange because you look in your mirrors and you're looking at cows kind of thing in the fields. It just feels very strange.
Yeah, but, in a two-lane road, you don't really have blind spots to worry about so much.
No, exactly. But I find I've had my mirrors like that for, I don't know, about maybe a year after I started driving. So I think 8 years or so, and no accidents, no running into anyone, no cutting anyone off. Well, only when I want to. But but yeah, I strongly recommend that people try it at least for a few days and try to get used to it.
Yeah, I know I've been doing that for something similar to that, moving the mirrors out. I've done for maybe, you know, 3 months now, and I'm used to it. I don't necessarily see the benefit, but because I still check my over my shoulder out of habit, but it's definitely a good tip to try. Don't let it creep you out the first week or so. Give it a shot, and maybe it'll make you a better driver. Ben, you said you've tried this too, haven't you?
Yeah, and it definitely creeped me out. I did it for about a week, and I'm just so used to doing, like you said, head checks. That's how I was trained to do to drive. Before I merge over, I check out my behind me. And it was just like, well, I was too freaked out to trust the mirrors. Even though, you know, I sort of tested it. I would, like, drive by a car on the highway and see, yeah, all right. So it leaves the rearview mirror and it goes to the side mirror. That's true. But it just, I don't know. It was too unnerving for me after years and years of being trained the other way. So I just was like, well, I'm switching it back. I may try it again. But
I think the main reason for doing it is that why would you be looking behind you when you're moving forward?
Yeah.
And it's the same where people will be looking left as they're making a right-hand turn and actually start their turn and then end up running into someone who's walking across the street because they aren't even looking. You always have to look where the vehicle's going, obviously.
Or where you want it to go. You get in trouble.
Because you've seen people on the highway that look in the blind spots or look in their, you know, do the shoulder check and they move over through half their lane. You know, they move their steering wheel.
They move
their
body
and
the steering wheel. Yeah. That causes problems. All right, guys. And with that, I think we'll wrap things up this week. I'd like to thank our special guest today, Mr. Eric Tritko. Eric, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Eric, you're very active on Twitter, and your screen name is Rumblestrip. Where else can people track you down besides Twitter?
My blog, which is rumblestrip.net. Also do a podcast for the two-wheel crowd, which is rumblestripradio.com, and that's well overdue for the next episode, which will be number 99.
99, coming up on 100. That's pretty cool.
The Wayne Gretzky podcast.
It's the Jorge Lorenzo, but yeah.
So how long have you been doing that podcast?
The first episode was March of 06.
Okay, so quite a while.
I think March of 06.
Okay, cool. And you also do videos, don't you?
I do some videos. I've done video work for other people, and then you'll see some stuff up on my blog for some of the car reviews I've done. And so I've been wanting to do another thing called Friday Thoughts, which is a video deal, but that's never really worked. So, but who knows, maybe in the future.
Cool. We look forward to hearing from you about that. And of course, many thanks to you, Miss Michelle Naranjo from lovely Long Beach, California. You can find all of Michelle's work at missmotormouth.com as well as carsala.com. Michelle, do you have any shameless self-promotion you'd like to squeeze into today's podcast? Anything?
This week, I'm leaving tomorrow to go learn how to off-road race with Emily Miller of Rod Hall Racing. I'm going on a women's off-roading thing in H3s, I guess. So.
Okay. Did you invite Michael along? I know he likes Hummers.
Well, I also raced with the Rod.
I don't know.
I also raced with Rod Hall Racing, and Michelle, you are in for a treat. They're the nicest group of people, and you'll have a lot of fun. Just make sure not to eat anything before.
Where's that being held at, Michelle?
It's outside Reno.
Oh, sweet.
Cool. Yeah, you'll have to fill us in on all the details. Let us know how that went. Sounds like it will be a fun
time. What
if
I come back most cautious again, though?
Well, don't be most cautious, Michelle. Come on. Go for the gusto.
Something over.
Do you have to wear a catheter like I had to wear?
What?
Are you going to have to wear a catheter?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I didn't have... No, they didn't make me wear one of the ones where like they go into your
side. You mean
a
stadium, buddy.
Well, basically. Right? I mean, it was a condom or prophylactic with a tube at the end. And because you're in the truck for like 8 hours.
Mm.
And, you know, you have to stay hydrated, but you can't stop, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So with the amount of water you should be drinking, you have to go. But they said to you, don't go when the truck is stopped because there's going to be someone working on it below the truck.
Wait, so I assume it just empties out beneath?
Yeah, down my leg sort of thing. Okay,
but out of the vehicle then, like through the floor?
Onto the floor, yeah. I mean, it is the hardest thing to go when you're cruising on the desert floor at 70 miles an hour. It's crazy.
Wow. I'd like to try that sometime.
No, you wouldn't.
All right, and we can't forget about our resident freelancer, Mr. Zachary Bowman, whose work is all over the internet, but mostly at autofiends.com and blogs.webridestv.com. Isn't that right, Zach?
That is right. And the Webrides blog recently got a new look, so we've got a little bit bigger art, and it's a little bit cleaner. So cool. You guys should stop on by and check it out.
Absolutely. Are you working on any big projects right now? Anything you're coming out with shortly?
Not a thing, sir. Not a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, enjoy your time off then.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it.
And of course, no podcast is complete without a resident downer to keep everyone's glee in check. Michael, if the people can't get enough of you on Roundabout, where can they get more?
On the Sleepy Time Station podcast, also available on iTunes. There's a Michael Banofsky podcast, unfortunately named, and I'm on Twitter as Michael Banofsky. I had chocolate.
I thought I had heard that you were doing a podcast, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
I did. I had chocolate before this thing started, and I don't know what it did to me.
What, did it put you in like a sugar coma or something?
I should be crashing right now, though. I shouldn't have crashed 5 minutes after I started eating the stuff. So I apologize to my listeners for my downer and frankly standoffish attitude towards many of our topics today.
Well, I hope they accept your apology. But good stuff nonetheless. Lastly, I'd like to thank our producer, Ben Sanders, for making this live broadcast and, of course, the edited podcast possible. Ben, thank you as always.
Always a pleasure. I swear.
Can we get a round of applause for that exchange? That was fantastic.
Thank you.
That was spot on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, well, I have pause written down on my sheet.
Apparently, oh, you don't have
got
resume.
It last time.
Man.
No. Got to remember that for next week. Anyway, remember, visit our website, roundaboutshow.com, for more great content throughout the week, including links and show notes. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or criticisms, just shoot us an email. You can swing by the site and click on the email button in the sidebar. And if you're feeling really ambitious, you can even suggest story ideas for upcoming shows. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just go to twitter.com/roundaboutshow. And to make sure you never miss an action-packed episode, subscribe. Just search for Roundabout in the iTunes Music Store or on the Zune Marketplace. That one's just for you, Michael. Anyway, thanks to all of you out there listening. Join us again next week as we circle the roundabout. We'll talk to you then. All right, guys, and with that, I think we'll wrap things up for this week. I'd like to spank our special guest, Mr. Eric Kirko.
Dude, you're gonna have to pay for that.
So just redo the segment titles.
Yeah, no problem.
In the catheter, highway catheter, tales from the open catheter.
Oh man!
Oh,
I don't like
our catheter of the week. Our blind catheter, and we're out.
There we go.